Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and this is Listen to Older Voices with a new program featuring the life and times of Melbourne musician Laurie Arthur. Laurie formed the iconic Australian group The Strangers in the early 1960s and then went on to form The Mixtures in the mid-1960s and continued on as a musician of note over many decades. As a child, Laurie suffered from a medical affliction that affected his ability to hold his neck up straight, which in turn resulted in terrible tormenting at primary school. However, it was during this time his father encouraged the young Laurie to build things, and he began building electronic pieces, including crystal sets, before moving on to valve radios, all at the age of 9. Then at 10, Laurie contracted polio, and the story of his polio testing and then the treatment is a process that would be considered as absolutely brutal today. Yet, he overcame these issues and, as part of his recovery, became heavily involved in physical activities, going on to become a sports champion at secondary school. So, without much more of ado, here I am, talking with Laurie. Laurie, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your home. Could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
I was born in Melbourne in 1942, 10th of August 1942.
Australia's just thrown itself into the Second World War. What would be your earliest memories? Do you have any memories of that period?
Not of the war at all, but my earliest memories were when I went to primary school at the age of 5. These days they would call it bullying, and I was heavily subjected to bullying, because I had an affliction where my collis, which is one of the two parts that holds your neck up virtually and control your neck, didn't grow. So actually, by the time I was 5, my head actually grew onto my left shoulder. Oh. My shoulders were straight, but my head, because one of the collises didn't grow and the other one did, over the years, and by the time I was 5, for me to look around, I had to turn around my whole body. So the kids are cruel back in those
Absolutely.
Days. And they would tap me on the shoulder and I'd try and turn around quick. So I was subjected to a lot of bullying then. And then I had a couple of operations and the final one, they took it out. When they took it out, I didn't go to school for a while. I had a neck brace on.
Sure.
But when they took the neck brakes off, it was pretty, I don't know what the word is, but being called out in front of the school and saying, now look, you can't play with this young guy because if you do, you could break his neck.
Oh no.
So I was sort of ostracized.
Under the spotlight again.
Yeah.
Oh.
So the kids didn't used to play with me then, and that went for a period in, you know, the junior state school, first, second, third grade, etc. But I recovered from that, but my mother, bless her soul, after I got the neck brace off, she took me into the children's hospital every day for 9 months.
Wow.
Because I wasn't required to have a bed.
No.
I used to have physiotherapy every day after school. And then every day after 9 months, every second day for another 6 months or so, until my neck strengthened up and I didn't require physio anymore.
So this is leading to all sorts of not so pleasant situations for you. I mean, you've been singled out at school, so the kids are leaving you alone, and then when kids finish school at the end of the day and go off and play, you've got to go to physio.
Exactly.
Yeah. So life must have been pretty lonely for you at that stage.
Yeah, it was, but, you know, I had other interests. I, like my father, got me interested in building things. I had a magnificent Meccano set, way beyond the normal. I had electric motors and made cranes and all that sort of thing. And he also got me into, started into electronics by, I was building crystal sets and winding the coils, and I graduated from crystal sets to valve radios, etc.
You're largely self-taught?
Oh yeah, very young.
Right.
Doing that.
So how old would you have been roughly that when you're building those sorts of things?
Nine.
That is young, yes. Yeah. You've mentioned your dad. What sort of person was he?
My father was the best keyboard player that I've never done a gig with. Before the war and during wartime, he wasn't allowed to go to war because the government said no. He was training ladies to make instruments at the government aircraft factories.
Ah, okay.
So he wasn't allowed to go to war.
Protected industry.
Yeah. But he did have a big band, 17-piece big band.
Wow.
And you did all the arrangements. Billy Hyde played drums in his band.
Well, that's the name.
And there are a lot of top players that I can't remember their names.
So you're exposed to live music from a very young age.
Oh, yeah. But that had two parts to it. Later on, when I wanted to become a musician, my father was against it. But there's a period before that that I'd like to mention, that it was a Sunday night, and I, at the tea table, I was about 10, and I announced that I've got polio. And my father said, oh, don't worry your mother like that. And I said, oh. My mother said, what makes you think you got polio? Oh, I feel all stiff and this and that. So the doctor came down that Sunday night, and it was raining, and we had the mud dirt roads in Glenroy. And he said, yeah, I think you should go into the children's. So an ambulance came and I went into the children's, and they got me up on this like bed type thing, and they said, just on your hands and knees, and like a fetal shape, but resting on my elbows and knees. And then they jumped on me and stuck a lumbar punch into me. Now, a lumbar punch is like a bicycle pump with a knitting needle on it. And unfortunately, they missed.
Oh, no.
So they had to do another one. Most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life. And in fact, the second one I virtually did black out. So the next morning after they tested it's a spinal tap.
Yeah.
Tested the fluid they got off my spine. They said, yes, he's got polio. He's got to go immediately to the Fairfield Hospital. And polio is infectious. So I was put in the isolation ward, which is really like a motel unit. You got your room and your bed, and in the corners, the bathroom and toilet. But the only people that could come in were doctors and nurses with the mask. My parents, no, my brother, no, or anyone wanting to come and see me in that 3 months weren't allowed to come in. And there were no drugs. It was just wait and see if you die, actually it was.
Wow.
And if you don't die, they gave me some drugs one night, and the next morning I woke up and I've got this screen all around me. And I could see I was in a bigger ward, so I yelled out, nurse, no one came, nurse. And a nurse just came and said, be quiet, young man, the doctors will be around later. I said, yeah, but I can't move. She said, I told you the doctors will be around later. And I was, without any warning, I've woken up strapped into a full iron cross, with my arms out and my legs, but I could not move, and a strap across my head.
Oh, gosh.
So I found out why that was done. That was done so that you didn't sort of contract, because polio attacks your central nervous system and your muscular system.
But it would have been terrifying for a young boy.
Well, Yeah, but so callous. The nurse, they didn't tell me the day before. Now, look,
no explanation.
When you wake up tomorrow, we're going to have to put you in this and that. Nothing. Just left to wake up. And it wasn't scary, but it was sort of, what the hell is going on? I can't move my arms. They're all strapped up. I can't move my legs. Can't move my head. I can't move anything. So I said, who's next door? Type thing, and a girl answered, I think her name was Jane. And I said, oh, I complained. Oh, they strapped me up from head to toe. I can't move. And I said, what have they done to you? And she said, well, I'm strapped up from the waist down with my legs. I thought, oh, that's, you can move your arms and sit up and that? Oh, yeah. Well, how long have you been strapped up, Jane? Oh, 3 years. And I thought, how?
Oh, no.
I'm going to be strapped in this thing for years. And eventually, I was. I was strapped up in that for 15 months.
That was an eternity, though.
And the only exercise I would get later on was they would unstrap me. At that stage, I couldn't even scratch my nose virtually. Because your muscles waste away to nothing.
Of course.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Laurie Arthur. And Laurie is recalling his early years as a child when he suffered from polio.
They used to put me in this wheelchair and take me down to a special pool where they had a ramp that they could winch the wheelchair down, and it was buoyant because it was a lot of salt, so you could virtually float. You couldn't sink. It was very, very much saltier than the sea, and so I could sort of move around in the water before I could walk. I couldn't walk. My education then was a lady, I can't remember her name, but she used to come around every second day, like Monday, Wednesday and Friday, for 2 hours. And it would be just a verbal bit of history, bit of this, bit of English. But I did really like the maths, or arithmetic, and sort of algebra, you know, like if A is 1 and B is 2 and C is 3, what's AB minus 2C plus B squared? And I go, oh. So I got pretty good at mental arithmetic, adding up things, just complicated, long divide in my head.
Yeah.
So that was that there. And at the end of 15 months being strapped up, I remember by that time I could walk, but for the first, say, 12 months I couldn't. But after the swimming, or the, not swimming, but the dog paddling and this and that, the last 3 months of that 15, I was still strapped up, but they used to unstrap me and massage me and slowly encourage me to walk. So at the end of 3 months, I remember being in the office of the doctors. There were three doctors, and they said to me, look, Laurie, for you to look and be normal, you're going to have to do a lot of exercise and sport, because at that stage I was skin and bone.
Of course, of course.
Everywhere, arms, legs, and not very strong at all. So when they told me that I had to do a lot of sport and exercise, I went on a 6-year morning, noon and night sport. While the other kids are playing around at lunchtime, I'm running around the oval by myself. I'm doing push-ups. I'm doing chin-ups.
How old were you roughly at that stage of your life?
Well, I got polio at 10, but it was sort of going to be...
So you're not a teenager yet then?
No.
No.
But they didn't put me down a class, which they were going to, because they give me intelligence tests and I pass really well.
Well, that's not surprising given how your age when you were doing electronics on your own, you know, building things. There was obviously something happening up in your head that was really strong. So I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, so they didn't put me down. I missed first form, but my second, third, fourth and fifth forms, that's 4 years. For those 4 years, I was absolutely non-stop sport and exercising and gym and boxing and high jumping and running.
Wait, did you get to the point where you actually were enjoying it?
Well, I missed first form.
Yeah.
So I started high school in the second form. I couldn't even probably carry the bucket for the football team at that stage. I wasn't in any team or anything like that. But in fifth form, I went into school running things, high jumping things, broke the record for backstroke, that sort of thing. But that was at Glenroy High. And I still left fifth form and wasn't at all into music.
But was that by your choice? Why did you leave at year five in fifth form?
Well, I didn't really, because Glenroy only went up to form five.
I see. Okay.
You were given the choice of going to Coburg High or Essendon High to do matriculation.
Right.
Or if you could get in to University High.
Right.
You got to write a letter and state your case why you should come to University High. Well, as soon as they saw that I'd won a Victorian school's swimming thing for a start, you're in.
That's right.
But throughout that 4 years of at Glenroy High, I can proudly say I never did an hour's homework. All the other kids got homework. The teachers just accepted it. I just said, look, I go to school for schoolwork. There's no such thing as homework. I've got sporting things on every night, and which I did.
You know, but it didn't affect your grades all that much, not doing that homework?
No.
No?
No. In fact, if you want a funny anecdote, in fourth form, we had a new senior teacher came. He didn't know the names of all the kids in the class, but he would say, all right, turn to page 60 and do exercises 1 to 8. And of course, I'd do them in my head. And I'd be finished before everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the period when I strapped up for 15 months. It's all head. You can't go to the beach.
Well, can't do anything else. Huh?
You can't go to the beach unless you go to the beach visually in as a daydream in your head.
So in some ways, whilst you've missed out on a lot, it actually helped you develop your imagination and your ability to
think through,
to think things through.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when this Mr. Hutchison came for as a new teacher and I was in fourth form and I'd finished before everyone else and I used to start mucking around. So if they're wild at you, they call you your surname. Arthur, not Laurie.
No, it was always surname, that's right.
Surnames if you're in trouble. Yes. Arthur, you haven't, what are you doing? You're mucking around, you haven't finished. Yes, I have. And when he came to look at my exercise book, there were just sort of 8 answers.
Yes, not showing how you got to them.
No, and he said, you've cheated, you've looked up the back of the book to get the answers. I said, sir, I never cheated. He said, well, what? I said, I did them in my head. He said, no, you didn't. I said, well, turn over a couple of pages and give me something we haven't done, like page 63, we're up to 60. And he said, we'll do that one. And I've sat there and gone, oh, yeah, the answer's 15.9 or something or whatever it was. Do that again on this one. Sat there, there's the answer. And he had to look up the back of the book.
Of course.
To get,
of course, because he couldn't do it.
You're right. I said, yeah, of course I'm right. Now, like an apology. Because he called me a cheat in front of all the class And actually, he sent me out of the room and stand outside the door. But when I came in the next time, he said, "You don't come in until I tell you." I said, "I want an apology." That's when I said, "I'll show you how I can do it." And point, you know, get me one that you don't think I know, and I'll do it in my head. So I did, and he said, "You're a cheeky young person."
So-and-so. Yes, yeah.
And so schoolwork to me was easy.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives.
So how did a young man, because you must have been in your mid-teens by now, to late teens, who has this brilliant mind and an ability to use it in that way, find himself in a career in music then? Especially with a father who says no.
Well, it wasn't till rock and roll, the kind of music.
Mid to late 50s.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't until 56 when rock came out that, and later, about 58.
So how did you access the music? What was your, was it radio?
Radio.
Radio was big, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So as soon as I heard, wow, Chuck Berry, my favourite, I want to do that. So we weren't well off. You couldn't go into a shop and buy an electric guitar in 58.
I would have been surprised if they even had them, because...
No, you couldn't. No. So I made one. And
why am I not surprised?
The first one I made, I ended up taking off the fittings that I bought from Lamberti Brothers. They had this magnificent warehouse where they had all this, you know, bridges and blank fretboards.
Yes.
And the first one I built, I chopped up with an axe. The second one I built, I took the fittings off and it became a wall hanging. The third one I built was playable, but not professionally playable. But I wasn't a professional. It was Australia Day weekend after I'd done matriculation at University High, and the next year I was to go to university. It was Australia Day weekend, and I'd been teaching myself guitar, and there were no books that you could get like today, or tapes or videos or YouTubes. There was nothing. There was absolutely nothing about rock and roll and how to play it. So you had to teach yourself by ear by copying things off records. So I'd copy things off the record and my father would say, you're mucking around. You don't even know the names of the notes. You don't even know your chords.
Not encouraging, was he, in terms of your music?
No.
No.
But he did give me the clue. You know, if you're going to muck around like that, why don't you learn some scales and theory so you know what you're doing? So I said, "Why don't you teach me?" And he said, "No." So I went into the state library a lot and got some theory out from them. So when I was doing matriculation, again, not bothering to study, I was tapering off my sporting ventures, because I'd achieved what I set out to do. I could swim fast, run fast.
And importantly, your body's fit, isn't it?
I was fit.
Yeah.
Extremely fit. One anecdote there was that I had a friend, Alan, who had a barbell, a long one, with 225-pound weights in the end, and it was 75 pounds. But he went to a weightlifting club. I was in swimming clubs, running clubs, that sort of thing. I wasn't into a weightlifting club like he was. So he said to me once, "I'll take you down to the weightlifting club, see if you want to join in that." I said, "Yeah, all right." So we've got down to the weightlifting club, which is under a football grandstand in Brunswick. And the guy who was the weightlifting coach said, "How much can you lift?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Well, you know why?" I said, "Well, Alan, who's bought me, he's only got a 75-pound barbell." Mm. And he said, "Can you lift that?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "What, one or two hands?" And he said, "What do you mean, one or two hands?" He said, "You can lift that one hand." I said, "Yeah."
Can't everybody?
So he said, "We're going to do some warm-up with Alan and we'll see what you can do." And he said, "I want to see you lift that one hand." So I did easily. And he said, "Well, we'll see what you can do one hand." And he kept putting weights on and I lifted 5 pounds over my own weight.
Wow.
And he said, "You've just on the first day you've come here, joined a club. You see that guy over there? That's Arthur McBain. He's the Australian middleweight champion. There's only two guys in the club that can do this, and now you're the third."
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.